KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, featuring stories of people of the valley, produced by media communications and journalism students at Fresno State, 90.7 KFSR.
Good morning, I'm Judith Saldivar.
And I'm Brittany Sosa. We are so glad that you're able to join us this morning for Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, stories about people of the Central Valley. This morning, we will be talking about a first-time voter.
We'll also hear from philosophy professor Dr. Andrew Fiala, who will put the upcoming election into perspective for all of us.
And former Fresno State basketball player Paul George could be an Indiana Pacer MVP this season. But first, the presidential election and what it means to millennials.
At Fresno State, there are many first-time generation voters.
That means, first generation means that there's not a culture of talking about American politics within families. So this is the first generation that's really paying attention. So I think just over time, as we progress further, we'll have second and third generation students coming here.
Being a first-time generation voter means speaking out for what you believe in. Juana Saldana, a Fresno State student, says being a child of migrant workers, she feels like her dad is serious when it comes to her vote. And the only reason she wants to vote this election is because her dad has been pressuring her.
Honestly, it wasn't like in the back of my head, like voting, because you know, I assume that my vote doesn't count, because that's what I've heard. But I mean, if it makes him happy to vote for, you know, Hillary, then I'm glad.
She says that her dad is scared for what Trump has in store if he becomes president.
Whenever my dad was probably like 30-something, he got sick, so like he hasn't been able to work. And he feels that if Donald Trump wins, because you know how in the news he says that supposedly something he was going to kick out all the immigrants because they don't belong here. And he's afraid that if it comes to that point, like, we're not going to be here anymore, so all the hard work he worked for, it's going to be gone, just like that.
Coming from a family of hard workers that crossed the border into California, Saldana doesn't know much about voting, but she says that she will do whatever makes her dad happy.
And I have never voted, obviously. I'm 22, and I haven't voted. So, but I do know that apparently Hillary is a better candidate than, you know, Donald Trump for whatever reason.
This election is unique because for most millennials, it's the first time they are old enough to vote. The millennial age runs from ages 18 to 35. In Saldana's family, she is not the only one who will be voting for the first time this year. Her brother, along with her sister, will also vote.
Well, he was the one that told me also, like, you should vote because my dad wants you guys to vote. So I think it's his first time also voting, and then my sister too. She's 20, going to be 25, and it's going to be her first time voting. So I guess it's, like, such a big deal, and I feel like we feel pressured by my dad, you know, like, vote, you know, like, you guys can make a change.
A lot of first-time generation voters don't know what to look for in a candidate. Professor Massoud tells us what he thinks students should do before voting.
You should do your research, look up the candidates. You should, before you go to vote, rather than your only source of information being what you heard on the news, what you saw with political commercials, political ads, actually try to do some research. So if you care about an issue area, right, like you care about tax policy, you care about education, you care about tuition, you care about immigration, you care about criminal justice, whatever it is, look up where the candidates stand, and don't just Wikipedia it. Go to their websites or even see nonpartisan accounts of how viable some of those plans are. Be informed, so you don't want to show up at the voting booth with little to no information.
Professor Massoud also says that voting for a president isn't the only thing you will be voting for this election. So don't think that that's the only option. Look into the issues that matter to you and vote for the right ones. He says without your vote, you have no voice. Brittany Sosa, Fresno State Focus, Radio Edition.
Voting has always been a touchy subject for most. When it comes down to who is going to win, some students for the first time come together to decide if they will vote and who they will vote for. As the presidential election comes to a close, it's fair to say it has been anything but civil. Tyler Bartlam talked to philosophy professor Dr. Andrew Fiala about what this means for our society.
I'm Andrew Fiala, and I am the director of the Ethics Center here at Fresno State and the chair of the philosophy department.
Fiala sees a lack of civility in this presidential election. He says Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have both acted without civility throughout their campaigns. After the third and final debate, Fiala gave one of his classes a survey on civility as part of the National Institute of Civil Discourse. His class gave both Clinton and Trump negative ratings, which reflects national data.
One of them's going to win. So what happens after that? I mean, if either one or both thought negatively, how do people come together after the election, especially when one candidate's saying, I'm not going to accept the results unless I win? What does that do to civility?
Yes, that is the great question. You're asking exactly the right question. You know, the national political scene has been very dysfunctional for a number of years. I mean, it goes all the way back. I mean, how far back do we want to go? But at least to Bush versus Gore in 2000, and that contested election. And then, you know, Democrats hated George W. Bush. I mean, it was literally at the level of hatred. Obama got elected. Republicans hate Obama. And so here we are with Clinton, Trump, and each side hates the other. In fact, each side accuses the other of being treasonous. So that, you know, this claim that Trump is a puppet of Putin's, that somehow he's got Russian interests in mind, that's a crazy claim. And then the claim that Clinton has broken the law and is responsible for killing people in Benghazi, those are also equally as awful claims. This claim, we're going to lock her up. You know, Trump says he's going to appoint a special prosecutor and lock Clinton. And then now that Trump's suggesting he won't accept the results of the election, oh my God, it's frightening. I mean, what's going to happen after the election? Each side is going to continue to hate the other. You can't have a functioning democracy with that level of animosity. You know, so civility has to be part of the solution. I think we need to remember that we can disagree with each other and still be friends, that we're all Americans, we have some common shared moral and legal and political framework, that we're all in it together, you know? We forgot about that somehow. And politics became so vitriolic and so divisive that it's impossible to bring people back together again.
Should politicians be held to a higher standard? Does that matter?
Yes, of course they should be held to a higher standard. I think we forgot this. Maybe we've forgotten this for a long time in American politics. We're not electing a person. We're electing a party and a whole apparatus that goes with it. So in our constitutional system, we don't have rule by one person. So the president cannot do anything by him or herself. It just doesn't work that way. There's a cabinet, there's a court system, there's the Congress, there's the states. I mean, it's a party apparatus that matters. The party platforms matter. The personalities, they're interesting, but the president can't just make stuff up. These elected officials, they're representatives of the platform, of the party, of their constituents. And maybe part of this is, you know, especially with Donald Trump, is he has made it about his personality in a way. But we're not electing a personality. We're electing someone who is going to serve the people and represent the people. It's part of our cult of celebrity, you know, like we're interested in these personalities and we forget about the parties. And we forget about the legal structure, and we forget about the Constitution. All that stuff's really important. There are differences between the Republicans and Democrats when you look at the party platforms. I haven't heard really anybody talking about those differences. You know, instead, it's all just been focused on this personal animus between the two. But the platforms ultimately guide everyone else. The platform guides the people in Congress and what happens at the state level and so on.
This is the first time a woman has run for any major party for president. And obviously, I think it was given that there's going to be an issue of sexism, but no one on the other side is telling them no. And we have Donald Trump supporters making comments about Hillary Clinton in a sexist way, and there's no one saying, like, hey, that's not okay. Is that lost? Is that ability for a candidate to say, you know, that's not true, or that's not fair to say about my opponent?
I would love to hear Donald Trump say, hey, let's cool it on the sexist stuff. But that's clearly not his strategy, or maybe his personality, or his ethical framework. We live in a society that is still sexist, pretty obvious in lots of ways, and especially has come out in this election. We're seeing all kinds of just these really nasty bumper stickers and posters and stuff that really just make fun of Hillary Clinton because of gender issues. How absurd. And let's admit, you know, it's a racist culture that we live in also. There's racism. But no one could get away with saying racist things towards President Obama. I mean, there were a few people on the fringes saying stuff, but it was always called out and said, no, you can't say this. Somehow the sexism is permitted and hasn't been condemned, which is deeply problematic. And it really tells you how sexist our culture remains. I mean, and hooray for Hillary Clinton, you know, I mean, there is something very symbolic about the first woman president, whether you like Clinton or not, personally or in terms of her policies. Just the idea of breaking that glass ceiling, hallelujah, that's wonderful. But the path to get there has really been rough in terms of the sexist stuff.
What is something to take away from this election and learn? So I think most people would agree this is not the best election in American history. I'm sure most people can say, I can't wait for this to be over. So what do we learn for 2020, 2024? What do we take away? Because I think as much as we can say, I don't like when they're mean to each other or argue, we feed off of it. So how do we as a society be better for the next election?
Yeah, yeah. One thing you said is we kind of feed off of this. There is a weird entertainment value in all of this, you know? I mean, you tune in, kind of hoping. I wrote a Fresno Bee column where I said, we like to watch the debates sort of like we like to watch a train wreck. Like, you're just hoping something crazy will happen. That's pretty sad, actually. I think it's true. I think there's a lot of people who are just fascinated with the vitriol. But that's a bad habit, you know? We should get over it. It's like we read the National Enquirer, you know, these tabloids. We shouldn't be fascinated by that stuff. The hopeful message, I think, is that maybe we'll be more engaged civically and pay attention to the Constitution and maybe use this as an opportunity for lessons in civil discourse and civility. I mean, it's, you know, make a silk purse out of a sow's ear kind of thing, you know. Something bad happens, if we can recognize that it's bad, then we can build on it.
So I'm a millennial. And I think a lot of millennials are very just turned off. What do you say to them who say, I'm not going to vote, it doesn't matter, or I just don't care enough, or this doesn't affect me? How do you encourage someone who feels that way to vote?
Yeah, well, the fall election includes lots of things beyond Trump and Clinton. So at the local level, individual votes really matter. The Fresno mayor race is very close, and that could be decided by a matter of hundreds or 1,000 votes. So at the local level, it really matters. And in fact, at the local level, it's much more rewarding to get involved because you can actually see the benefits of being involved. It's really hard to be involved at the national level. So you donate some money to Clinton or Trump or something, and who knows where that money goes, to buy them a cheeseburger. I mean, but at the local level, it really matters. And so the disengagement, the worry is that if the national election creates this sense of disengagement, then young people don't get involved at the local level. And that's really bad, because young people can make a huge difference locally. And that includes, so that's, you know, mayoral race and whatnot, and also at the state level with the initiatives. Some of those are going to be close, and actually the votes matter. And it's good for people to pay attention to the issues and educate themselves on them. So, you know, I guess, you know, I'd say to people, you don't have to vote for every slot in the ballot, but there's some you really should vote on because it really will matter to you. Maybe at the presidential level you want to write in none of the above or something. Okay, you know, that's your right to do that. But, you know, pick one for mayor. because that's going to really make an impact on your life here in Fresno. I mean, the mayor is going to be involved in revitalizing downtown and all the rest of this stuff that's hugely important for our quality of life here. So we have democracy, and it doesn't work very well, and we're dissatisfied with it, and that's good. I mean, it'd be better to be dissatisfied with a dysfunctional system than to be satisfied with a dysfunctional system. So in a sense, like all the criticism of it, that's actually part of a good democracy, that we should feel dissatisfied, you know, and then we should work hard to get the government we want, knowing that we probably never will.
We've been talking with Dr. Andrew Fiala, a philosophy professor at Fresno State who specializes in civility in politics. Tyler Bartlam, Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, KFSR.
Although many people will be going to the polls this coming Tuesday, there are also people who already decided not to vote. Ed Marchilla explains why people decided not to vote and how it can affect the outcome of this election.
At just a few days away from election night, we were expecting to talk to undecided voters. However, the answers I received at Woodward Park on this autumn afternoon were different.
I'm not going to vote for either candidate.
That was Alan. He asked us not to use his last name, but as he and his wife were about to go on a run through the park, he offers a reason why he's not going to vote.
I don't like Trump, for one thing. He's not a great politician, and there's a lot of bad things he's done in the past that I don't see him fit to become president. And for Hillary, she has a lot of trust issues with things that she's done in her track record that reveals that she's not really open and to the public to looking into her things that she's done with her emails, and that can just be the tip of the iceberg for things that may not be known to the public.
Alan also takes on a point of view on presidential elections.
I mean, it's all a personal choice. Like for us, doing the popular vote is the way it's set up. It doesn't necessarily translate to electing a president because you have an electoral college, and so for us in the state like California, where you have for the vast majority, it's traditionally Democratic. You know, your one vote, you know, doesn't necessarily count as much as you think it does. You do it just to voice your opinion, or you're this either you like the candidate or you just don't like the system.
We will hear more about votes and the Electoral College in a moment. Elsewhere at Woodward Park, Natasha Kohara and her four-month-old puppy Oliver just finished their first time at the dog park, meeting with other dogs. Kohara, too, says she's not going to vote.
I've decided, well, right now at this moment, I've decided not to vote because the major candidates don't really I have no interest in any of their views or their politics. I pretty much think they're both jokes. I mean, I know there's other candidates and I haven't done my research on them, but that's my own fault.
Kohara shares her concerns on the candidates.
Just things, I mean, everything. The whole immigration, the gun laws, equality rights, a lot of things like that. Those are the three major keys.
Kohara also says it's important to research the candidates before deciding who to vote for.
I mean, if one of the candidates, their political views says something that grabs your attention, maybe look more into that. Don't just go off of one little remark. You kind of have to do your research, and you can't believe everything that you hear from them or from anybody else until they're there.
Dr. Lisa Bryant, professor of the Department of Political Science at Fresno State, lists other reasons why people may decide not to vote.
Those are pretty much the main reasons people decide not to vote. So they either don't like the candidates, they feel like they're picking the lesser of two evils is a really common response. Even though there really are five candidates on the ballot, but most people are not aware of that. So people don't like their choices. They feel that politics has become too nasty is a reason that people don't want to engage. They feel like their vote doesn't matter, their vote doesn't count. obviously this season you've heard a lot of, oh, is it all pre-decided anyway? Have they already picked who's going to be the winner? The other thing is a lack of knowledge or low interest. I mean, people might not find politics important. They might not be able to make those connections to their daily lives and think, why do these things matter to someone like me? Do politicians care about people like me? So those kinds of reasons are the reasons we usually hear that people don't participate.
And remember Alan talking about the vote counting in ways people don't expect? Dr. Bryant offers some insight into the Electoral College.
So when we're talking about the presidential race, it's really easy to think that your vote doesn't matter because of the Electoral College. However, it is important to remember that the Electoral College is based off of the popular vote. And so in a state like California, we don't do proportional allocation of electors. We do a winner-take-all system. So if you are on the losing side of the presidential, the public vote for the president, then you don't get any of the electors. So it feels like your vote doesn't matter. However, in an election when it is close, when the race is really tight, you know, it is still based off of the popular vote. Those electors are not assigned to be to the Electoral College electors until the popular vote is tabulated. And so it really does end up mattering.
Dr. Bryant also says people who don't vote can affect the outcome of the election.
Ultimately, what it means is that the people in Washington are representing the interests and meeting the needs of a smaller and smaller group of people. And so as we see less people turn out, that also usually means it's a less diverse population. Older, primarily white voters tend to be what we call habitual voters. They show up every election, especially those over 50 years old. So if we think about the policies that we end up with, they're going to be catered towards the people that the politicians know are going to show up at the polls. Why do they need to worry about addressing the policy concerns or the issues of young people if they know they're not going to show up, right? They don't need to because their vote, their position in office isn't dependent on those people. It's only dependent on the people who actually show up at the polls. So that's a really important reason that we need to have a bigger group of people turning out that actually represents, you know, sort of more of the people who make up a district or a state so that everybody's voice is at the table when it comes to making policies.
Much of the early voting is already taking place, and Election Day is this Tuesday. If you need information on the election with candidates and measures in Fresno County, you can visit the county clerk's website by searching Fresno County Clerk. Edmar Archila, Fresno State Focus Radio Edition.
If you watch the Indiana Pacers play, you might see a familiar face on the basketball court. David Chavez got the chance to speak with former Fresno State star Paul George about his journey to the NBA.
Former Fresno State basketball star Paul George has faced many obstacles in his young career, but none as scary as breaking his leg in a Team USA exhibition game in 2014.
It was a hard time going through it and like just coping with it. Like being a professional athlete and being at the highest level and being athletic and relying on your athleticism. And then when you have an injury and now you rely on other people and, you know, you just have doubts that you'll ever get back to being the same.
At the time, George was a budding star, and though the future for him looked bleak, he remained focused and determined to come back stronger than ever. And that's just what he did.
Very fortunate that I was able to return back to form and be myself again. But it was a hard time for me, just coping with, you know, being, you know, dependent on someone else.
Along with family, George says he received words of encouragement from many of the top players in the league.
From, you know, Kobe, from you know, LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh. I think, I've spoken at some point to almost everyone in the NBA. Almost, it felt like, you know, every guy in the NBA that had reached out and, you know, just told me that, you know, everything was going to be okay. Just go through the process of rehab and remain positive.
In the 2015-2016 season, a year after the horrific injury, he led the Indiana Pacers to the playoffs with a 45-37 record and a number 7 seed in the Eastern Conference. He finished the season as the number 12 leading scorer in the NBA. He was named to the All-NBA third team for the third time, the All-NBA defensive second team for the second time, and was voted to represent the Eastern Conference in the All-Star game for the third time in his career. George is no stranger to facing challenges and uphill battles. He played basketball for Fresno State from 2008 to 2010, averaging nearly 16 points and 7 rebounds per game. He was drafted number 10 in the first round by the Indiana Pacers in 2010.
Man, it was a dream, you know, dream come true. Get to do what you love to do as a living. And, you know, it was obviously a whirlwind coming from, you know, a small town, small city, and, you know, now being like the man of the house immediately, you know, it has its pros and cons. But it's been a blessing. You know, this journey has been, it's been a good trip each year. I just feel like, you know, I've gained or I've added something new, and I've had a bigger experience.
George is appreciative of his time in Fresno and has no regrets of choosing to be a Bulldog over anything else.
I had a great time in Fresno. I loved it. You know, my time being on campus, you know, from going to, I can't think of the name. What's the restaurant there? Bulldog Doghouse.
Doghouse.
Yeah, man. I crave that every now and then, to be honest. you know, it's something about that barbecue sauce. But Fresno was amazing, man. You know, if I had to do it again, I'd pick Fresno again.
Another former Bulldog basketball player and current Miami Heat guard, Tyler Johnson, credits George as being an example of what it takes to play at the next level.
You know, he was definitely somebody I looked up to coming out of school because of the success that he was able to have. So, you know, it's very humbling to have somebody who came before you to kind of show you what route to take.
During the offseason, when George heard news of Johnson receiving a 4-year, $50 million contract, he made sure to give Johnson a call.
Yeah, I congratulated him after he got the deal. And we spoke a little bit. I'm happy for him. He came into this league off talent, and you know, he's made a mark in this league now. You know, he should be here for some time. So I'm really, 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 really proud of what Tyler has become.
Current Fresno State basketball head coach Rodney Terry reiterated George's sentiment about him being a proud Bulldog.
I was a very proud Bulldog. He really is. He had a great experience here for 2 years, and he keeps close track of what's going on with our program. I think he's very proud of where he played and what we're doing right now.
Last season, George went to watch Fresno State play when they were in Oregon.
And I got a chance to talk and sit with him for a little bit. But yeah, I keep up with my alma mater.
When George was drafted, many saw hints of potential in his game, but never expected him to flourish and exceed all expectations. He has emerged as one of the top players in the NBA and should be a candidate for this year's MVP honors. Although the goal of winning a championship sits at the top of his list, he knows there's more to basketball than rings and awards.
I want to be a champion, first and foremost. But, I mean, I want to be the best player that I can be. I want kids to grow up and, you know, view me as someone that they want to idolize their game after. You know, of course, I want them to be better than me and strive to be better than me. But I want that same, you know, same way I grew up loving Kobe, loving watching T-Mac, loving watching Penny Hardaway. I want that same, you know, be that stand-up guy for kids and that role model for kids to grow up to be. But, you know, again, I want to be remembered as a champion and as a winner.
This summer, George had the opportunity to go to the Rio Olympics and help Team USA win a gold medal.
That was kind of like closing the chapter of that injury, you know, because I ended up playing for the USA team. But winning that gold was kind of like, you know, closing the chapter and moving past that whole injury.
This year, George was selected to grace the cover of the popular EA Sports video game NBA 2K17. Whether it be on a video game cover, wearing an Indiana Pacers jersey, for playing for Team USA, he is proud to represent his hometown city of Palmdale, California, and to have been a Fresno State Bulldog.
It means everything. Honestly, I keep up with a couple other of our fellow Bulldogs. Keep up with Derek Carr and what he's been doing. You know, there's Greg Smith I keep up with. But, I mean, to be a Bulldog, it, you know, if you make it from there, you know, we're not the biggest school. We don't get the biggest, you know, spotlight or whatnot, but you know, when you're a Bulldog, if you make it from there, you know you worked extremely hard and you're driven. If you make it from there, man, you can make it from anywhere.
This is David Chavez, Fresno State Focus Radio Edition.
Next week on Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, we'll talk with students about alcohol use and abuse on campus.
And Alexis Govea will look at the millennial vote, especially those voters who are going to the polls for the first time.
Next week on Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, we'll talk with students about alcohol use and abuse on campus.
And Alexis Govea will look at the return of the wrestling program at Fresno State.
Fresno State Focus Radio Edition is produced by Professor Faith Sidlow. Our stories and interviews are produced and edited by Tristan Lewis, David Chavez, Thalia Arredondo, Tyler Bartlam, and Edmer Archila.
This program is produced in collaboration with KFSR 90.7 FM. For Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, I'm Judith Saldivar.
And I'm Brittany Sosa. Have a great morning.
KFSR presents Fresno State Focus Radio Edition, Saturday mornings at 5. For a complete program schedule, visit kfsr.org.